Hey, everybody. Welcome to Mini Crush.
The Mini Crush edition.
How you doing, Noel?
Good. You see, I doubled up. You usually say, welcome to Movie Crush, the Mini Crush edition.
I just called it Mini Crush,
you
didn't
did.
I?
Oh, you did.
Oh, boy. See what you're doing to me?
I'm cool with it.
You're taking over.
I'm all about changing the paradigm, my friend.
Yeah, and, in your favor.
Well, you know, it's in the people's favor, Chuck.
It's in the people's court.
Who is the judge of the people's court?
Judge Wapner.
Wapner.
And it's funny, Josh and I did an episode on Project Valkyrie, the plot to kill Hitler.
That's right.
And their kangaroo court at the time in Germany was called the People's Court, which is hysterical.
That's really funny.
Because it certainly was not Judge Wapner.
I love the idea of a kangaroo court. It just sounds really cute. But apparently it's
not cute, Noel.
I've gathered that.
Nothing cute about it.
Is this our first mini since the holidays?
Yes. Welcome back, sir.
Welcome back to you. You're looking quite dapper today. I like your hair.
Hey, thanks.
You can compliment me on my hair?
Oh, I took off my glasses, Noel. You look like a fuzzy mess, but now you look like a handsome sharp mess.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
I enjoyed bumping into you the other day.
That was fun. Yeah, out in the wild.
Yeah, so everyone knows, huge news. Mm-hmm. I bumped into Noel on the street.
It was weird.
I was leaving the zoo with my wife and daughter and in-laws.
Yeah.
And there you were across the street at an outdoor cafe.
A bistro.
Your daughter.
With my daughter, yeah.
And we all had a little sidewalk huddle.
It was very nice.
And then that was it.
We went on our merry ways.
Yeah, it was good.
Did you see any cool movies over the holidays, Chuck?
Well, fuck, man. What have I seen? My head is so in 100 places right
That's
now.
That's fair. There's a lot of things going on.
And everyone, that's not to say I'm not dedicated to this episode. I just got a lot of stress going on.
Yeah.
And I can't recall what movies. You know what I did see? Did we already talk about it, First Reformed?
No.
You know, the Ethan Hawke film.
No. I don't even know about it. Oh, this is the one where he's a
Paul
priest?
Paul Schneider. Not Paul Schneider.
Is it the one where he's a priest?
It's the one where he's a priest.
I heard it was great. Everyone seemed to be gaga about that movie.
It's really good, man. Well, it is Paul Schrader, of course. Paul Schneider is
different,
my pal.
Different
my
guy.
Former guest.
Paul Schneider. Which one is he?
He did Back to the Future. He's an actor.
Oh, the guy from, he was in Parks and Rec and stuff, right?
Yeah, but don't say that.
That's what?
He doesn't want to hear the Parks and Rec guy.
I like Parks and Rec.
He was on that show briefly and like didn't even love it, and he's done so much great work.
I don't care how he felt about it, Chuck. I enjoyed him on the show, okay? That is irrelevant, sir.
Yeah, the Parks and Rec guy. You know what? Schneids gave me a Christmas text. That was very nice.
What?
That's what kind of guy he is.
No way.
He's like, how you doing? Thinking of you. And I'm going to New York in a couple of weeks. You might hang out.
I got a Christmas text from my ex-girlfriend.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd it say?
It was very triggering. No, I'm kidding.
Hope you got coal in your stocking.
No, it was nice. It was just we hadn't talked in a couple months.
And, here's a turd for your front porch.
It was just a hey, and, you know, hope you're well. Merry Christmas.
That's
and
good.
Blah, blah, blah. And I responded in kind.
All right.
And we left it at that.
Well, it is the season, Noel.
It is indeed.
You guys had a good holiday, though?
Oh, man. Me and the kid my mom went to Universal Studios, and we had the fast passes, so we, like, breezed past all those suckers waiting in those three-hour lines.
It was dude, you got delight. To accomplish your bucket list goal, Harry Potter Land.
Yeah, I always wanted to go to Harry Potter Land, Chuck, and as it turns out, there's two Harry Potter Lands. Who knew?
Really?
There's one in the Universal, and then there's the Islands of Adventure, which is the adjacent park,
okay.
And you take the Hogwarts motherfucking express from one to the other. And then back again, and it's a different experience each time.
Cuddle cat, cuddle fish, to the second oil age.
And his kingdom was full of darkness.
I don't dispute the Eros data, but if he's down here, we'd know.
Not blood, but darkness. The earth's black riches. No. I could taste it on my lips.
Today, I want to talk to you about the science of transgenesis.
Transgenesis.show.
What's the Hogwarts Express? Is that a...
It's the train?
It's the monorail?
It's the... No, no.
Dressed
it's,
up
it's,
like
it's,
a, something it's not?
No, it's more than dressed up, Chuck. It is the train from the Harry Potter movies.
That's pretty neat, huh?
Very cool. You go into a whole station. It feels like you're in the London Underground.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is it? Platform 33 and a third. I forget. I haven't really.
Well, just check your lower back tattoo.
That's fair. I can't see my lower back, Chuck. I'm going to need you to see it
yep,
for
turn,
me.
Bend over. Yep.
Yep.
33rd and a half.
Yep, that's the one. Yeah, so, but man, seriously, the design of these areas is out of control. It's out of control. Just to get up to speed, me and my mom, on the ride up to get my daughter from Tampa, where she was hanging out with her mom and stepdad, we listened to the first Harry Potter audiobook.
Oh, okay.
Just to kind of like really prime ourselves for the experience.
Yeah, and you sort of recited it as like in stereo.
Yes, of course. That was important to me to be able to do that and to know that I still had it.
Yeah, and your mom was like, "You've memorized this book, son?"
And she was like, "I'm proud of you." And she hugged me. And it was a very tender moment between me and my mother. We really bonded over that Harry Potter audiobook. But no, so there's like the two areas. There's like the Hogwarts type reproduction of the Hogwarts castle, mm-hmm. and then there's the Gringotts bank vault ride, and the lines for them without the fast passes, I shit you not, 3.5 hours. And first of all, I'm like, how could any experience after waiting 3.5 hours possibly be like live up to that investment of time?
Got to be a letdown.
It's got to be. So it was 30 minutes for us.
3.5 hours people wait?
They wait 3.5 hours.
So what do you
Chuck?
Do? Like two things in a day?
That's what I'm saying. You got to like book 2 days at the park, and the fast passes are not cheap. But I wouldn't have done it any other way.
What do those run?
About $300 a person. Yeah,
that's totally worth it, though.
Oh, it was so worth it. I mean, it was like a night and day experience. We got to ride all the weird old school rides, like the ET ride is still there, and
oh,
it is
sure.
fucking
that,
weird.
I remember that thing.
Oh, it's great. It's like you're on this bicycle on a track, and you're going through the forest, but it's all sets and crappy animatronics. And, you have to tell the attendant at the beginning of the ride your name, and they scan it and put it on this card, and then at the end,
that's right, ET says
ET
hello,
says
or whatever.
Your name, but he says the name of everyone in your little carriage.
Amazing.
So it's like, goodbye, Noel, Chuck, Sandra, Eden, Steve, Michael, and John. I'll be right here.
Oh, that's great.
It was fun.
Man, that thing hasn't changed a bit. Did they still have the Back to the Future ride?
No, that one's gone. The T2 ride is gone. The other old school ride that's still there, which I feel old saying this is old school, but is the Jurassic Park water ride, which is super dated but still super fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, man. I'm close to... like, how old is a kid wanting to go to Disney? 5?
Well, Eden went to Disney a couple years ago, and I think she enjoyed it then. But now I honestly think it's a little too kiddie for her, and that the Universal was much more her speed because she likes the thrill rides. And let me tell you, the Incredible Hulk roller coaster, best roller coaster I've ever been on in my life.
Really?
So it's like it takes you up and you go through this tube and it's like this gamma ray tube. And so you can't see the outside. And it does the click, 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 click about halfway up and then it just shoots you out.
Oh, wow.
And it kind of tricks you into thinking that it's going to be like a
one of those long uphill
things. Yeah, but then it just launches you immediately into a corkscrew and then you're doing all these. It's got like 8 inversions is what they call it in the coaster community.
Wow.
But Eden rode it and she's just now tall enough to ride pretty much any crazy roller coaster.
And she's down.
So, she's so down.
Man, the last time I went to Cedar Point in Ohio about 6 or 7 years ago. And that was the first time I'd been to a major park. And Cedar Point's supposedly like the best
really?
In the country. Yeah. As far as like coaster enthusiasts.
Yeah.
And it had been a long time since I've been on those rides. And I love all that stuff, but they kicked my ass, dude. I'm not ashamed to admit that afterward I was like, wow, that felt like astronaut training. Like they're so extreme now.
Oh, man.
It was a bit much for me.
Well, like, I only recently got back into it because we got season passes to Six Flags, and Eden kind of the girl I was dating at the time kind of, like, guilted me into riding every ride. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be the one that waited in line and then had to step out like an old lady and, like, you know, the walk of shame or whatever.
Yeah,
so
or the scared kid. That was me when I was really young.
So, I just sucked it up, and I rode every ride at Six Flags and then realized, like, I really like roller coasters. So
yeah, I like them. I think it was just – God, you can get that old body up there now. And I was kind of at the end of the day, I was like, man, my ass is kicked.
Well, I also tracked our steps from walking around. We were there at Universal for about 13 hours. My mom stayed.
A lot of walking.
My mom stayed half the day with us, and then she tapped out about midway. She's just, you know, she's older.
Sure.
And then we went back to the hotel. We stayed on site, so it was super easy to get back to the hotel and then come right back.
Yeah.
And then me and Eden just, like, grinded it out until closing time. But I tracked our steps. We did 27,000 steps.
Wow.
Walking around Universal
Studios.
That's
a lot
of
steps.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun, though, man. It was a great holiday. How about you? You guys, you said you kept it pretty chill.
Kept it chill. Stayed around. We don't have to travel for the holidays anymore. It was not, you know, it was Chris. We're not in our home, you know, because we're renovating our house. So it was a Christmas not in our house, which was not the greatest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready to move back.
I bet.
I'm ready to be back in my goddamn house.
I bet.
I miss it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to complain about renovating a house like some.
Yeah, those are called first world problems, Chuck.
Yeah, first world problems. So First Reformed, great movie. You got to check it out. Really, like, up your alley.
Is it like a priest with a moral quandary kind of picture?
It's not quite what you think.
Oh, really?
I will say that.
Okay.
I mean, it's Paul Schrader. You got to remember.
Paul Schneider?
This is the guy who, you know, created Travis Bickle.
Oh, that's right.
He's Taxi Driver. And his work is dark, to say the least.
We've talked about him, though. Didn't he also have a couple of misses? Didn't he do some, like, weird bad shit? Didn't he do Showgirls or something like that?
No.
what did Schrader do that was a little bit, like, kind of
He's had a weird career. I mean, a lot of it was as a writer, because obviously he wrote Taxi Driver and Raging Bull. But I think he directed Affliction. You ever seen that movie?
I have
Nick
not.
Nolte?
No, I have not seen Affliction.
Autofocus?
He did something weird, though. He did, like... Oh, he wrote The Last Temptation of Christ?
Yeah, I mean, he was Scorsese's guy for a while.
He wrote Bringing Out... I think Bringing Out the Dead is a very underrated Scorsese movie. Although I do remember I saw it when I was very young and I was on LSD. And I thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life. But I haven't seen it since.
You took acid and watched that movie?
Yeah.
Just so many more fun things to do on acid.
I know,
that.
It was kind of a bummer movie, wasn't it? But it was also very, like, intense and colorful and, like, you know, all over the place. Yeah, I'm wrong. I thought that he did like, The Hills with Lindsay Lohan or something.
Who did that?
I thought that
was Schrader?
I thought it was him. Did he direct it, maybe?
Maybe.
He had a very weird – hold on a second.
Uh-oh.
The Canyons. Yes.
Yes, the Canyons.
He did The Canyons with Lindsay Lohan and the porn star.
Yeah. That's right.
James Dean. That's right. I knew he did some weird misstep that people were like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, that
Paul
is pretty
Schrader?
Strange.
Yeah.
Well, he has come back strong because First Reformed is great. Ethan Hawke will be an Oscar nom, I would imagine.
I bet.
He's so good in it.
I think I told you I watched The Favorite.
Man.
It was my favorite movie of 2018.
Oh, wow. So updated list, huh?
Yeah, big time.
I did not realize – I mean, I wanted to see it, but I didn't realize it was Killing of a Sacred Deer.
That's right.
What's his name?
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah, I didn't know that was him.
Not to be confused with Panos Cosmatos.
Right, or Skopidopoulos Kimonopoulos.
Exactly, that guy. the thing that's cool about it is very much a period costume drama with a lot of, like, palace intrigue and backstabbing and the kind of stuff you'd think it. I mean, I actually haven't seen Amadeus, but it reminds me of what I would think Amadeus might have been like.
Jesus, no.
I know, Dan. I know. It's one of my big holes. It's one of my gaping holes.
It's just so big.
It is. It really is. It's disgusting. But it also is weird and psychedelic and very much that guy.
Yeah.
But it's not some alternate reality world like his other movies are, where there's something a little off about the universe. This is very much like set in its time in the, I want to say, 1700s, or it seems like more like Victorian England.
Yeah.
When they're at war with France. I'm not good with numbers, even though I host a history show. You'd think I would know these things.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's good. I really recommend it.
Well, maybe I'll catch it before it leaves theaters and we'll crush to judgment.
Yeah.
That'd
be fantastic.
I'm hoping to get some screeners soon. Because my December is when I can usually get to the theater, because Emily gets real busy and I get slower. And I did go see a lot of movies, but maybe I can get some screeners, because I'm sure that'll be a nominee of some.
You got an N?
Yeah, I got a couple of N's.
You got some N's?
Yeah. I can't say names.
No, of course you can't.
They're not supposed to lend
them.
They're
watermarked, right? Aren't they watermarked these days,
I
the
think
screeners?
So.
They've
sure.
got, like, they're individualized for
they
the
They should
for the
just
person.
Do the Mission Impossible thing and have it self-destruct after it plays.
I've got a wreck real quick, just before we get into whatever you've got up your sleeve.
Well, no, I have a note here that says waste 10 minutes at the beginning
beautiful.
Of the show.
Oh, beautiful. Well, we're doing it brilliantly. This is the catch-up. We haven't seen each other in a minute.
I know.
Have you seen the show Adam Ruins Everything?
I've never seen that.
I really like it. And
I know the show.
There's an episode he does about Hollywood, and I recommend it highly because it demystifies all the fakery behind like awards shows and whole like For Your Consideration campaigns and how basically the movies that win are the ones that put on the most lavish parties for like the Hollywood foreign press and things like that. It's all very much kind of like it sort of sucks.
Like politics.
It's a lot of politics, but it also goes into some real cool behind the scenes stuff about how fake reality shows are and the idea of like Frankenbiting, where you can like cut up things people say
and then
have a cutaway where it's their back and they literally manufacture a sentence by stringing together bits of other things they've said.
Oh, yeah. Like anyone that still thinks reality shows are not completely wholly manufactured are just living in a dream world.
They're basically in the same boat as people that still think professional wrestling is real.
No one thinks that.
Did you know Andy Warhol was a big fan of WWF wrestling?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't, but that doesn't surprise me.
Mean Gene. You know Mean Gene, the announcer?
He just passed away.
There's an incredible clip. I recommend everybody check it out, where he's like doing his post-match interview thing, and you see Hulk Hogan in the background, and Cyndi Lauper's there, and then Andy Warhol comes up, and Mean Gene's like, ladies and gentlemen, a real New York luminary, Mr. Andy Warhol. He's like, have you ever seen so much bedlam and chaos in your life, sir? And he goes, I just can't even believe it. It's just so exciting. It's just so exciting. I just don't even know what to say.
Yeah, but the real answer is yes, Andy Warhol has seen that much bedlam in his life.
Yeah, and debauchery. But no, apparently he was genuinely a fan, which makes sense considering how fascinated he was by gross commercialism.
Sure,
spectacle. Yeah. So at first I was like, that seems wrong. But then I was like, no, that seems absolutely
right. Like Salvador Dali, if he was alive, would probably be into WWF.
But just the way he responds, he's like, it was just so exciting. I can barely contain myself.
Yeah. It shows, Andy, your magnanimous personality. He didn't strike me as someone who was a lot of fun to hang out with.
I think he just kind of toyed with people a little bit. And it was
sort of
always had like his recorder and like camera and was just kind of like trying to like
get out of my
make
face.
People kind of like, you know, be his subjects all the time. I don't know. He's an interesting fellow.
He is. I'm not going to knock him too much. Go draw a soup can.
He didn't even draw it, did he? I mean, wasn't it just kind of like Xeroxed or like...
Oh, did he just blow up like graphic prints?
I don't know. Call me on this. But I think a lot of what he did was definitely commodifying other images. But I think he probably had some artistic chops as far as being able to draw. But I don't think of him as being a painter exactly. I think of him more as being like
graphic artist.
Like a printmaker or something, you know?
Interesting. Well, Noel, we actually did the first two things. Because on my list here it says waste 10 minutes, trash Andy Warhol.
Mm-hmm. Boom.
So now we're on to a new segment.
Okay, oh, boy.
And actually, I don't even have my outline that I did for these episodes, so we're just going to kind of freewheel it through these as usual. But this is a new segment, Noel, called Up With Fuck.
That's fantastic. That fills me with joy. And I actually saw this on the social media, you asking people this very question.
Yep. I asked people on the Facebook page, what is your favorite F-bomb in a movie? Please give me the exact quote so we can read them as, you know, maybe not in character, maybe in character.
Depends.
I feel like I can pull it off. And here we go. We had 346, so we're going to continue this one.
I was one of those.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I dropped one in there.
Well, why don't you go ahead and start off? What's your quote?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Oh, favorite F-bomb.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
I mean, it was the first one that sprang to mind.
I got you.
There are many, many fantastic F-bombs in cinema.
All right, well, here's one. We're going to go ahead and start off with one that was upvoted the most from Melinda Bacaleo. I know I've said that name a bunch. Great name. Coming to America. It's one of my favorites, too. Good morning, my neighbors. Hey, fuck you. Yes. Yes. Fuck you, too.
Is that R-rated?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize Coming to America was R-rated. I don't know why. I guess Eddie Murphy was sort of always R-rated, wasn't he?
Until he decided to be...
A shill for Disney?
Yeah, basically. And do...
the clumps and all that shit.
Do children's movies.
He also... Well, even The Nutty Professor, that was PG-13. That was him edging into PG-13 territory.
I never saw that.
I'm sorry.
The clumps?
Wasn't The Nutty...
I think The Nutty Professor was The Clumps, but then there was like a sequel, right?
But what was the one where he was wearing the fat suit? That was that,
That's Nutty Professor.
That is The Nutty Professor. But that was meant to be kind of crass, gross humor, but it was PG-13.
All right.
So it was
But it was like fart jokes.
It was fart jokes.
Not real good, dirty anymore.
It was also very fat shaming. It was kind of not
Oh, good. Sure. That was not, back in a time
nice.
Where
not nice.
You could put someone in a fat suit in a movie and it's like, hey, that's funny. He fell down.
Big fat suit performance coming up. John C. Reilly as fucking Laurel, yeah. Hardy. Laurel. Which one was the fat one? Ollie? Oliver?
I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to let you dance
Hardy.
This on your own.
Hardy was the fat one.
He's supposed to be great in it.
Yeah.
And
I saw the trailer before.
And he needs
to
pay reparations for the Sherlock Holmes movie that Whew. Is getting some of the worst reviews I've ever seen
it's
in my
nuts.
Life.
I read a thing saying that, you know, how Netflix apparently has a thing they do where they very magnanimously will release stuff that doesn't test well for studios.
Yeah.
Like they'll offload it to
oh,
them
sure.
for cheap or
like
whatever.
We'll take your garbage.
Yeah. And yeah. then, but they apparently passed on.
Did see
so
that.
They were forced they said, no, to actually release it. And then they released it with very little fanfare, no pre screenings for
no,
critics.
No, no, no.
And they
bailed on the marketing.
They made enough money just with blind idiots going to see
right.
it on Christmas weekend.
Yeah, no offense to anyone that went and saw it on Christmas
yeah,
weekend.
No, no, okay. I just mean people being like, Will Ferrell, funny,
sure,
you know? Let's,
exactly.
Let's go see
it. Like, how bad could it be? And apparently, like, Scotty saw it, and it indicates, I think, the laziness of the movie industry today to basically be like, this is a train wreck, but hey, we got these two guys.
Yeah.
Just let them do their thing.
And
it'll
think,
be funny.
I think Will Ferrell is fantastic and hilarious.
Yeah, he's the best.
He's also technically our coworker now.
Well, it's a little weird.
It's a little weird, huh?
Yeah, everyone, look forward to the Ron Burgundy podcast.
Seriously.
Coming on our network
bonkers.
Soonish.
I've heard some behind-the-scenes stuff, and
yeah.
it sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous yeah. of those guys out there in L.A.
Me too.
What a lot of fun to sit in on that. Mike Sam says, when Professor X and Magneto are recruiting an X-Men first class, they meet up with Wolverine. He simply says, go fuck yourself. The surprise of that cameo adds to the effectiveness of the F-bomb.
See, this is sort of goes into like ratings history, right? Because
sure.
I think you can get like a limited number of F-bombs in a PG-13 movie now. And it also,
yeah.
in the Adam Ruins Everything show, they do an episode on, in the Hollywood one, about ratings. And apparently, like, I want to fuck you is different than fuck you.
Oh, sure. And, like,
and
if it implies sex.
Sexuality is a big no-no for the MPAA. They're very
sure,
prudish.
Because sex is dirty.
Evil. So, yeah, you can have, but it's still, a PG-13 movie can't just be dropping F-bombs left and right either.
Right. They got to walk that line.
They have to really pick and choose and make it like for impact, like that
yeah.
one. Like that's probably the only F-bomb in any X-Men movie I could think of.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So that lends itself to like great line.
Yeah, big wow moment.
Yeah. Matt Kamel says, this is Marcellus Wallace from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, boy.
Nah, man, I'm pretty fucking far from okay.
Yeah, he is.
Woo. All right, Benjamin Johnson from The Big Lebowski. Do you see what happens, Larry, when you fuck a stranger in the ass? This is what happens, Larry. This is what happens, Larry.
Have we talked about the TV edit version of that? There's several.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, there's one
what
of them. One of them is when you leave a stranger in the Alps.
Oh, that's
or maybe
funny.
It's find a stranger because that would match up more with the F word. But there's another one where it's there's a couple.
I mean, how can you even try to do Big Lebowski TV
oh,
safe?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. It's
don't
crazy.
Even bother.
It's crazy. There's a bunch of good F-bombs in Big Lebowski.
Find
a stranger in the Alps, yeah.
Oy.
Big Lebowski is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's so funny. And it's such a good L.A. movie. It's so true to, like, you know,
sure.
the geography of the place and, like, all of the little kind of hidden gems.
Yeah.
And it's got that vibe to it. I love it.
Did you happen to see Jeff Bridges' Golden Globes Lifetime Achievement Award speech?
No.
That's pretty funny.
Is it good? Is he very zen? Is he very dude?
He's very dude.
Yeah.
He's very much that guy.
Yeah.
He was rambling at one point, just going on and on. I was at home just cracking up. And you could see the audience members. Chris Pine gave him the award. And it showed shots of him behind him just cracking
oh,
up.
Oh, I bet.
Of like, he's
this
being
guy.
The dude.
This guy right here. Yeah, he seems awesome.
He's supposed to be great in IRL.
Oh, I mean, I can only imagine.
Patricia Caffrey, maybe she goes by Pat, from Half Baked. Fuck you, you're cool, and fuck you.
That's good. I've used that before.
I haven't seen that one in a long time.
I always think abracadabra B, you know, when something's going wrong and you just kind of talk into your lapel and say abracadabra B.
Was that from the movie?
That's their, like, they're doing like a heist or some kind of thing, like to, you know, raid this drug. No, I know what it is. They're wearing a wire and they're like infiltrating this drug kingpin, and that's their like code word that everything's going pear-shaped or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's, and the one character is always calling everybody B, you know. Gotcha. So he says abracadabra B. I always say that.
What happened to that guy?
Yeah.
Jim Brewer?
It wasn't Jim Brewer. It was the Latino guy whose name I can't remember.
Brewer's in it though, right?
Brewer is in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure what happened to Brewer, no.
Jeez, everyone in that movie kind of went away.
Brewer had his heyday kind of in those like 90s American Pie type gross
SNL,
out comedy. Well, of course, but there was like a whole golden time, you know, for
the golden age of Jim Brewer.
The golden age of Jim Brewer.
We're on Brewer time, everyone. Neil Balfour says, "Oh, fudge. Great one. Ralphie and A Christmas Story. It's a clean F-bomb, everyone." Oh, yeah. Breakfast Club. Taylor Peterman. "What about you, Dad? Fuck you. No, Dad. What about you? Fuck you." And then there's one more even.
Is that meant to be like a powerful moment between him and his dad? Is that like...
Have you not seen The Breakfast Club?
I haven't seen The Breakfast Club, no.
Oh, God. I'm so mad at you.
Well, the holes reveal themselves just in conversation, not in these pedantic lists that
these
you throw.
Silly games.
Me. Yes.
Laura Bjorklund. Ooh, great name. She goes with Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Solid choice.
Solid choice. Little Miss Sunshine. Hannah Corrali says, "Little Miss Sunshine, after the brother figures out he's colorblind and can't be a pilot, just an amazing, gut-wrenching, fuck!" Yeah, that was a great movie. I really enjoyed that. Helen Lyons, Adventures in Babysitting. Elizabeth Shue's character, don't fuck with the babysitter.
Don't do it.
She got a lot of upvotes for that.
Well, I got a good one.
What you got?
From Heather's. Fuck me gently with a chainsaw.
Oh, good Lord, Noel.
Why? They say it. It's a good one. Heather's got a lot of good quotable little nuggets.
Yeah, Emily and I.
What's your damage, Heather?
Yeah, we still, how old is that movie? 30-something years? 35 years?
Pre-Beetlejuice.
We still say, can somebody tell me why I whatever and like eat this ice cream or whatever?
Yeah.
And we'll go, because you're an idiot. And we'll go, oh, yeah. Because that's what she always said to her dad.
Greetings.
Somebody tell me why I smoke these things.
Yeah.
Because you're an idiot. Oh, yeah.
That's the recurring motive with her parents or whatever.
Exactly.
That's I had never seen it. And my girlfriend made me watch it. And I'm forever grateful. It's a really cool movie.
It's great.
And that person never did anything else.
Who?
The director. Whoever was responsible for that movie. It's such a unique thing.
Oh, that was a sort of
one-off almost. Flash in the pan. One-off kind of, yeah.
So weird. Quinn Cavill says... we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K.
Who's Danny K?
Oh, God. Really?
Yeah, we've talked about this, I think.
Danny K was an old actor.
That's right. We've talked about this.
About Danny K?
I think Danny K's come up.
I don't think so.
Didn't he have a particular comedic style? Wasn't he like a kind of a vaudeville-y, Catskills-y type comedian? And he was sort of a... I know what it was. It was on my other show, Ridiculous History. We interviewed a guy who wrote a book about the history of comedy, and he was talking about how Danny Kaye was a big influence.
Oh, really?
For a lot of like early like.
Hey, I'm not like some big Danny Kaye guy, so I don't want to come across as a Danny Kaye snob.
No, not at all.
All right.
I was trying to remember where I heard that before.
Is it one of your other shows, Noel?
Yes, I have a cavalcade of other shows.
Stay focused.
All right, I'm here.
Aaron Cooper, our old friend, says, "Fuck, even in the future, nothing works." Which was, of course, Dark Helmet from Spaceballs. Patrick Gorman from Goodfellas. "You said I'm funny. How the fuck am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me?"
Joe what Pesci? Am I, a fucking clown? Do I amuse you?
So great. Oh, here's another Lebowski. Surprise, surprise. Ian Eight says, "Nobody fucks with the Jesus."
Of course not.
Aren't they going to make a movie, a Jesus movie?
I heard that they were, but it seems to be languishing in some form of development hell, or I'm not sure. I seem to have read something about how it was happening and something about how it was like on the back burner.
Gotcha.
By the way, the director of Heather's, whose name is Michael Lehman.
Did he die?
He did not die. No. He just does a lot of TV. He's just kind of done a lot of TV. He never really did another feature. A lot of little one-episode, two-episode credits on various.
It's funny. I've done that before where I've been like, what happened to their career? And it's like, actually, I've been working steadily as a director for 25 years straight, and I'm doing just fine. But you just, you know,
you don't get notoriety for directing two episodes of Dharma and Greg.
That's true. And you know what he did do that was sort of some note? He did Airheads. Remember Airheads?
Yeah. I didn't see it, but I remember.
It's the one where the rock band breaks into the radio. Brendan Fraser and Steve Buscemi's in it, too.
Oh, that's right.
And they're trying to get airplay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he did that. I didn't see that. Not a good movie.
Robin Shiflett said, fuck me gently with a chainsaw.
Boom.
Brian Ingrate, Alan Arkin, Argo, fuck yourself. That's a good one. Ooh, I need to tell you off mic and all about a little special plan we have coming up in the next few months.
Oh, cool.
Remind me.
I will.
That's a little tease for you guys. Something special coming out in a few months. Rob Brodeur says, nice fucking model, honk, honk, from Beetlejuice. I don't know if I recognize that line from Beetlejuice. Not sure I know that
one. They had that model city up in the attic.
Maybe that's it.
I don't. Yeah, honk, honk. It's on YouTube. Let's see.
What's that?
This is the scene. It's the part where Beetlejuice gets shrunk down at the end of the movie. Nice fucking model. And then he grabs his junk and he goes honk, honk.
Yeah.
It's at the end when he gets like shrunk down and trapped in the model.
Yeah.
I didn't remember that.
You know, one of my favorite lines for that movie is when he's in the waiting room and he looks at the guy next to him with the sitting next to the guy with the shrunken head.
That's right.
And he goes, let me ask you something. How you get him down so small?
How you get him down so small? Yeah.
And he switches tickets with the guy.
That's right.
All right. Just a couple of more of these because we are a rambling man. Our buddy Gail Kuntz says, not sure if this counts as an F-bomb. Probably not. Well, that's not true. It's a total F-bomb. From Silence of the Lambs. You know what's coming, Noel. Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me hard. Oh. I'd fuck me so hard.
He doesn't say that. He doesn't say hard.
Does he not?
No, he just says, I'd fuck me.
I think you're right. Did Kuntz elaborate on this?
I think he may have improvised that line a little bit.
Oh, no. Kuntz is a lady.
She may have improvised that line a little bit. Yeah, I think that's sort of what makes it. He goes, would you fuck me? I'd fuck me.
And then he has
the tuck, obviously, going on. Whoa. And he's got the kimono.
Yeah, the
and
penis
he's
tuck.
Kind of doing the goodbye horses wiggle dance.
Yeah.
I that's a great scene. And that's great song. And that artist never really did anything else.
Well, they don't need to.
Such a good song.
All right, we're going to finish up with one more from the great movie The Thing, and Scott Rusfold said this one and got a lot of good votes for it. I know you gentlemen have been through a lot, but when you find the time, I'd rather not spend the rest of this winter tied to this fucking couch.
Nice.
Great. All right, we're going to keep this going, everyone, because
like
there
it.
Are so many great F-bombs.
Up with fuck.
Up with fuck. Thanks for tuning in.
I wonder what Ramsey can come up with for a sound cue for that.
Oh, hey. All right, Noel, we are going to finish with comment card. Only two segments this week because we had a good long catch-up period. And read a couple of your questions. This is from Emily Martin. Hey, Chuck, did you cry when Rami Malek won Best Actor for playing Freddie Mercury? Because I did. Tell you what, Emily, I did not cry because I did not see that live. We didn't watch the Golden Globes. I did see the speech online afterward and was moved, but not moved to tears because it was like on my phone.
That was like a real upset. That was a real upset.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, because a lot of the film snobs did not care for that picture. And I know you enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, and I'm sure it's a lot of fun.
Well, performance-wise, you cannot fault the guy.
Oh, well, I cannot,
it's great.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that one, I think it won Best Dramatic Picture.
Is it right? I knew it won. I knew it won a lot.
But
of,
now that I know about Adam Ruins Everything, maybe they just do the best goddamn party.
It's interesting, though. That movie was so plagued with problems. Because it lost its original star. It lost its original director. They apparently had a lot of problems with the Queen camp controlling the narrative and like not letting them put certain things in. And that was a big beef with the movie. People were like, they glossed over some stuff. I know you didn't see it that way, but it's just interesting that it kind
of... No, I mean, I did, but I just still loved it.
Yeah, no, it seemed like a lot of fun.
Its fault.
That's the thing about those kind of movies, though. It's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be exactly accurate or exactly right.
Yeah.
So it's all about kind of like making it a fun depiction or like a, you know. And Queen, the music of Queen anyway, is all about big theatrical fun. Why wouldn't that be what the movie would be like? You know?
Absolutely. I'm all for it.
Yep.
We'll do Ginny. Oh, man, with the names, everyone. Tomasebi. Ginny, with an I. What's the biggest twist you never saw coming and loved? Well, without overthinking this, The Sixth Sense, I mean, I'll go ahead and put it out there. I saw that in the theater when it came out and did not see that twist coming. And sure, there have been plenty of movie twists before The Sixth Sense, but that one was so epic that it really, like, I was pretty impressed with it. I haven't seen the movie since then, actually, and I don't think I ever saw The Sixth Sense again, but that twist really, really got me.
Yeah, that was
did
back
not
when,
see it.
That was back when twists were a new thing. There'd never been a twist before in a movie.
Mm. No, Noel, I just said that there had been plenty of twists. But that was the first one that, like, made headlines.
No, but those were, like, the days of, like, after that, every movie had to have a fucking twist.
You know?
And then Shyamalan out-twisted himself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, go back to Psycho, the twist with
that's
Mom.
That's a good twist.
Mom's in the basement.
Yeah, but that movie had a double twist because Janet Leigh, who was a big star, got murdered.
Yeah.
Like, as hell.
Sure.
And then it was like a totally different movie. And then it kind of changed gears.
Yeah.
So that was like the first twist. And then there was the second twist, which was that, that it was Mom.
You should check out Rebecca. It's the movie that.
That is one that I have not seen.
We released a couple of weeks ago on this show with Karen Freed.
Cool.
Assistant costume designer on Stranger Things, picked Rebecca.
Yeah.
And I had never seen it.
Yeah. Have you seen Rope?
Never seen Rope.
Rope is the one where it's like.
I know Rope.
A one shot.
Yeah.
But they fake it. Kind of like Birdman.
It's kind of like One Room, though, right?
Yeah, it's One Room, but there are cuts, but they hide the cuts with like doors opening, and it's very clever.
Yeah.
It's very like there's like a chest that opens and it'll fill the frame, and then they close it, and then that's actually a cut. Very clever early tricks.
Yeah, and plugging our colleagues over at Behind the Bastards, I believe they released a Hitchcock episode because he is a legendary asshole.
Yeah, yeah,
no good. Susan Partington says, if they made a Movie Crush movie, who would play you guys? Noel, who would we cast as ourselves? I mean, I always get the Kevin Smith thing, which I just hate.
I hate it, too. I've been getting it since high school. Dude.
You've gotten Kevin Smith?
I always get Kevin Smith. Yeah,
I used to get Jack Black. I'll take that.
I used to get that one, too. And I also used to get Zach Galifianak.
Yeah. Well, we're not twins, but. We look more alike than a lot of people
That's
in this
very
office.
True. It's very
you look
true.
More like me than anyone else in this office.
I know. Same, Chuck.
You know, and I'm happy with that.
How about this? I'll play you and you can play me.
Done.
All right. Cool.
Perfect. All right. Let's finish up with one more here. William Angus is asking about the show itself. He said, do you ever coach a guest on what movie they should pick or really strongly suggest something? Not really, William. I generally don't coach them aside from, like, I just kind of want to make sure it's a movie someone really, really loves and they're not just picking a movie they think they want to go out in public with as, like, their favorite movie.
Right.
Like, even if your favorite, like, whatever, if it's Back to the Future or Die Hard.
Yeah, or like, who was it that had Titanic? It was Nate DeMeo?
Yeah, Nate DeMeo. He went in hard with Titanic.
It was like a guilty pleasure acknowledged kind of that it was, but he like just owned it.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing.
Yeah, that's the only coaching I do because sometimes guests will send me a list and be like, hey, I'd be happy to talk about any of these. And sometimes I will look at that list and say, well, why don't we go with this one because – maybe it's a genre we haven't done, or maybe it's just something I think the movie crushers would enjoy hearing about, as opposed to maybe something more obscure. I've noticed our more obscure episodes about obscure movies don't go over quite as well. But I mean, we stand by them, dude.
Oh,
we've done
for sure.
Mishima, Life in Four Chapters. We've done Tokyo Story.
But it's also like it's cool. It's a cool discovery tool. Some people would never have thought to check out that movie until they heard somebody they were interested in talk about why they're so passionate about it.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone. That's it for this week.
It was a good one.
Thanks for indulging us on our catch-up time. And I think that's it for this week. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Bye.